I'm Liz Larson.
And I'm Bill McKenna.
And together, we created the Cogno Movement System. And we'd like to welcome you to the New Life Perspectives Radio Show,
where we're going to be sharing with you tools, tips, and ideas that are going to change your life.
Hello, hello in UK Health Radio Land. I'm Liz Larson, and I'm here with my friend,
Bill McKenna.
Hey, Bill McKenna. And we are the team here that hosts the New Life Perspectives Radio Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. And we just happen to be the pair that created the Cogno Movement System. Today, we have a guest that I don't know him. I've never met him before, but he's near and dear to my heart. His episode on Gaia, I think I've shared more than any other episode that there's ever been. And it's Dr. David Brownstein. And he's going to talk with us about the relationship between iodine and salt. Now, I know that sounds weird to everyone out there. It may sound strange to you if you've never heard it before. But he's got some amazing information for us. So I want to just say, welcome, Dr. David Brownstein. Will you tell the audience a little bit about you?
Thanks, Liz and Bill, for having me on. I am a medical doctor practicing outside of Detroit in Michigan. And I've been practicing medicine for about 30 years. And I started off a conventional doctor and basically went to medical school to model myself after my family doctor and had no tendencies of holistic leanings or natural therapies or anything like that. I bought into what I was taught, and you know, that's why I went to med school in the first place. I never grew up in a holistic household. We didn't take vitamins. We went to the doctor when we were sick. We took what the doctor told us, and we never questioned anything. And so I went to med school with that in mind, and just to be a regular family doctor and be able to take care of people. And I finished my residency and began doing conventional family medicine. And around 6 months into that practice, I started to have some uneasy feelings. And I didn't quite know what that was about. But what happened to me at that time was I lost sleep for 3 nights in a row. I couldn't sleep. And I became anxious over it. And I remember getting up and getting ready for work and, you know, blurting out to my wife out of the blue for the first time, I don't want to be a doctor anymore. And she said, what's wrong? And I said, I don't know. She goes, well, why are you saying that? I'm like, well, I'm treating people with all these drugs. They're not really getting better. And I'm having to use more drugs to treat the side effects of the first drugs. And these drugs are just treating symptoms of their problems, you know, not their underlying cause. And she said, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know, but I can't do this for the next 30 or 40 years. And she said, well, why don't you do another residency? And I'm like, no, those are all the same. One was enough. And you know, I was floundering at the time, and the short version of the story was that I had a patient who was bothering me to meet his chiropractor. Now, at that point in my career, I never referred to chiropractors. I never met a chiropractor. I didn't know what they did. And I used to actively tell patients to not see them because I thought they were dangerous. And this patient was a friend of mine and said the chiropractor helped him more so than just adjusting him. And so in this anxious state I was in, he saw me that morning that I told my wife that. And he said, here's Dr. Radke's phone number. And he wrote it down and gave it to me. And I called him, set up a dinner meeting for a few days later. And, you know, was getting ready to go to that dinner meeting after working all day and told my wife, I'm just going to cancel. You know, what's he going to do for me? I don't like chiropractors. And she said, that would be rude. You need to go, and told me to be nice out, you know, on my way out the door. So I met Dr. Robert Radke. He was a chiropractor about 10 years older than me. He was using functional chiropractic medicine, using nutrition and adjustments to treat his patients. And he was talking functional biochemistry to me, which is the first time anyone had spoken like that to me about something useful, that all the biochemistry that we learned in undergrad and graduate school. And he bought me a book, brought a book to that meeting. And the book was Healing with Nutrition by Jonathan Wright, who was an allopathic physician. And I remember coming home from dinner. I was all excited because he was sort of talking about how you can use biochemistry in your patients and think about it and, you know, adjust biochemistry and see results. So I read Dr. Wright's book till about 2 or 3 in the morning. Remember, that was, I wasn't sleeping then either, you know. And on my way to work the next day, I called my dad. Well, I don't think we had cell phones then, so I probably called him before I left for work. And I said, Dad, I want you to come in the office. I want to do some blood work on you. My father had his first heart attack at 40. He had his second heart attack at 42. Over the next 20 years, had 2 bypass surgeries and numerous angioplasties, and was on, at that point, 12 different medications to treat cholesterol, diabetes, hypertension. And he was a mess. He was having continual angina for 20 plus years, chest pain, you know, from little activity. He was taking nitroglycerin pills like they were candies. He looked terrible. He was pale and pasty. Couldn't do anything because he would get chest pain. He looked like he was going to die at any moment. And I was actually waiting for the phone call that he had died. Wow. And so based on what I read that night, based on what he had talked about to me, I drew 2 blood tests on my dad. I drew his thyroid levels and his testosterone levels. And my dad was seeing the best doctors in our area for heart disease. As I said, he was on 12 different medications to control all those things. And he wasn't doing well. So I get his blood work back a few days later, and his thyroid levels, which were in the reference range, this is low and this is high, it was down here, but in the lower part of the reference range. And his testosterone levels were below detectable limits from the lab. They were so low, they weren't reading. So I put him on 2 things. I put him on bioidentical natural testosterone topically, and I put him on natural thyroid hormone. And within 7 days of doing that, his 20-year history of angina melted away and never returned. Called me up with, I think it was day 7, and said, "Hey, I didn't use any nitro pills today." I'm like, "Why not?" He goes, "I didn't have chest pain." I'm like, "How many are you using a day?" He goes, 4, 5, 6 every day. And he goes, "I'm thinking I'm feeling better from this stuff that you put me on." So that got better each day. And then 30 days later, he's feeling much better, still no chest pain. I have him come back in and draw his blood test again. His cholesterol, it was always stuck in the 300s on cholesterol-lowering medications. Now, I'll put a little asterisk there and tell you my father was a terrible eater. He could eat the worst foods and the huge amounts of the worst foods. He was overweight. He was obese. Never exercised a day in his life. But his cholesterol stuck in the 300s without changing any of his bad dietary habits, fell below 200. Perfect. His inflammatory markers all fell, you know, either to normal or closer to normal. He wasn't using nitro pills. He looked better, reacted better. He went from pale and pasty in his face to pink and healthier looking. People were asking, you know, "What are you doing? You look so much better." And once I saw those changes 30 days later, on the lab tests and my dad, I decided that's what I wanted to do in medicine. So I was in a practice, going to be a partner, you know, negotiating in a buy-in. And I first got rid of my lawyer because I didn't need that. And then I went to the partners and I said, I need to leave. How long do you need me for? And they said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I want to go do holistic medicine." They said, "What's that?" I'm like, "I don't really know, but I think I'm going to have to figure it out." And they said, "Well, why don't you just do it here?" And I said, "No, I can't do it here. I got to go somewhere else. I got to have an office where everybody's doing holistic medicine. The people answering the phones, the nurses, the doctors, everybody's on the same page." And I left, you know, shortly thereafter. And, you know, I did a 180, I felt like. And, you know, once I calmed my father down, I wasn't going to be a partner and it was okay to do this and I'd figure it out. It's turned into the best thing I did professionally. And, you know, here I am pretty much 30 years later. You know, I've written 17 books and lectured across the world. And, you know, it's a thrill having, you know, the practice that I have now and doing what I do now. And it's a nice way to practice medicine. And, you know, it's an interesting field. And as Dr. Radke taught me from the beginning, I'm using functional biochemistry, thinking about biochemistry and the patients together as one. and trying to, you know, support their nutrition and support their biochemistry to help them optimize their immune system and, you know, how they make energy and all that. And, you know, that's my short story. I don't know if you'll think it's short, but that's my story and I'm sticking with it.
That's awesome. I mean, amazing that you were able to help someone in your own life first. My question is, did you start sleeping after that?
You know, I did start sleeping once. It was about 30 days later. Once I realized this is what I want to do, you know, there was a little, you know, my wife was pregnant with our first child at that time, and I'm leaving this practice. I'm going to go do holistic medicine. I don't even know what it is. But my wife was great. She told me, if that's what you want to do, you can do it. And, you know, we'll do it. And, you know, I told her, if I have to go work in the emergency room, I'll go work in the emergency room for a while at night and do things. And, you know, it's yes, I started sleeping. As soon as I realized that was my calling and that's what I wanted to do, and that's where my passion was, you know, the anxiety settled down and the sleep came back.
So that's amazing that you found your passion, and that's wonderful. And we're happier for it because we know that you've pioneered a lot of the work in a lot of areas with these 17 books, and two of which are just iodine and salt. And I know those are just two nutrients. In holistic medicine, we deal with nutrients and helping the body absorb and get better absorption. But these are two big subjects and big misunderstood subjects. I knew when I was a kid, you know, early 20s, this man worked with my mom in a bakery. It was this big, tall, skinny man. His name was Milton. And he'd come down from really high north in Canada. And he said to my mom, he said, I got to say something, and I don't want to be mean. I noticed that everyone in the U.S., the minute I crossed the U.S. border, how fat everyone is. He said, you people are just fat. He was a funny guy. He said, you know, when we were growing up as kids, well, my mom said, response was, you know, I think it has something to do with iodine. We don't have any iodine in our water. And he said, you know, when we were kids, we all took an iodine pill a day. And you hear this from people in other countries. And in the U.S., it's pretty foreign. So I knew all the way back then that he was on to something, but had no idea what to do about it. So will you pick up the conversation for us there? Let's start with iodine, and then I'm sure you'll bring us up to speed on the salt aspect of it.
Well, unfortunately, Milton's observations were correct, and they're still correct today. And whenever I leave the country to go lecture somewhere else, I am amazed at the different size of people across the world versus what's happened here. It's a health disaster. I feel like I'm slow motion watching this just epidemic happen. But anyways, so what happened with me and my work with iodine was that after treating my dad with thyroid and testosterone hormone, natural versions of both, every single patient for the last 30 years, I always say my dad was my first patient, my first and best patient. But every patient since that point has gotten a full hormonal and nutritional evaluation. And part of that hormonal evaluation involves checking their thyroid levels. So thousands of patients, 30 years later, you know, I've got lots of data on this. And, you know, I started to see this picture of far too many patients having an underactive thyroid. I mean, it was one patient after another. And, you know, I started studying hypothyroidism. And, you know, we learned a little bit about hypothyroidism in med school. And what we learned was you just take a TSH level, a thyroid stimulating hormone level. That's a hormone that comes from the brain and the pituitary gland. And it stimulates the thyroid gland to produce thyroid hormones. So if the TSH is too high, the brain is telling the thyroid, make more hormone, there's not enough. If it's too low, there's too much out there. So the problem for hypothyroidism or an underactive thyroid is when the TSH level is too high, it's stimulating the thyroid too much to make thyroid hormone. So I started to check everybody for all their thyroid hormones. In med school, I wasn't taught correctly about thyroid. I was taught just check TSH levels, they're abnormal, give them thyroid hormone. If they're normal, something else. That's not true. That's not an appropriate way, a complete way to evaluate somebody for the thyroid problems. They need their inactive and active thyroid hormone levels, T4 and T3 levels checked. And they also need a reverse T3 level. You know, that's another complete way to check the thyroid. And they need their thyroid antibodies checked. Is the body producing these chemicals called thyroid antibodies that attack the thyroid and cause an inflammatory problem of a thyroid gland? The diagnosis for that disease is Hashimoto's or Graves' disease. But once I started checking all these levels on people, I found these huge amount of people with Hashimoto's and Graves' disease, and a larger amount of people were hypothyroid, you know, an underactive thyroid. And when thyroid hormone is needed by every single cell in the body 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and to stimulate energy production and metabolism in the cells. When there's not enough thyroid hormone, everything gets sluggish and, you know, people get cold. They don't produce enough energy molecules, ATP molecules, and they get tired and they get heavy. Body gets fat when there's not enough thyroid hormone. They can lose their hair. They can get puffiness. And, you know, I started looking for this stuff and started seeing it. So start treating people with thyroid hormone and they're getting better. I'm using natural desiccated thyroid hormone and my practice is growing and patients are happy. I seem like I'm happy, but it was bothering me. Why are so many people needing thyroid hormone? You know, 10 years into my holistic practice, I would estimate that I had 3/4 of my patients on some dose of thyroid hormone. And I kept thinking to myself, this can't be true. There's no reason we were designed just because we're adults and getting older, we need thyroid hormone in our lifetime. That's not how it was in the past. Some people do, but not everybody, not 3/4 of the people out there. So I started to look at the biochemistry and physiology of the thyroid gland and what are the cofactors to stimulate the production and maintenance production of thyroid hormone. And, you know, there are many things that the thyroid gland needs to make thyroid hormone, like selenium and magnesium and vitamin C and hydrogen peroxide and some other things. But so I would try these various cofactors and see, perhaps I won't need to use as much thyroid hormone. And nothing worked as well as thyroid hormone. One of those cofactors that's needed to make thyroid hormone is iodine. And the highest concentration of iodine is in the thyroid gland. And you need iodine to make inactive and active thyroid hormone. It's named T4 and T3. And the reason it's T4 and T3, thyroxine and triiodothyronine, is because there's 4 atoms of iodine attached to thyroglobulin for T4 and 3 attached for T3, the inactive and active forms of thyroid hormone. So you can't make any thyroid hormone without iodine. Now, I used to try iodine the first 10 years on and off in my practice to see if that would help my patients. And I didn't see any bad results with it, but I just wasn't seeing good results with it. I would try little doses, medium doses, high doses, and I'd get frustrated with it. And so I'm always reading. You know, I come home from working a whole day, have dinner with the family. My kids were little back then, you know, play with the kids. As soon as they were in bed, I was in front of the computer looking at or reading articles for 2 hours before I went to bed. I still do the same thing today. Just don't have little kids to look after, even though I miss that. I tried this iodine. I'd read the literature on it. I wasn't 100% clear what I was reading, but it wasn't working. So I would try it for a while, give it up, try it for a while, give it up. So around 10 years into my practice, so it was a little over 20 years ago, I read an article by a researcher who said he developed an iodine loading test. Now, at that point in my career, it was the late 1990s. There was no testing, adequate testing for iodine available. So I was interested once I saw this. I live in Michigan. It's in the Great Lakes area of the United States in the northern sort of central to eastern side of the U.S. We have the Great Lakes bound our state, which is Michigan, on the map. And our soil has been known to be one of the lowest iodine concentrations in the soil in the world. It's been known for over 100 years, and I knew that. I kept thinking everyone's got to be iodine deficient. You know, we're in Michigan. Soil doesn't have an iodine. Therefore, the water and the crops grown here won't have iodine. But the iodine wasn't working. So I read this article. I called him up. His name was Dr. Guy Abraham. He was a medical doctor who wasn't practicing medicine. He was just doing research and came onto iodine and, you know, wrote about this test that he developed. So I talked to him and ended up flying out to California to meet him. And, you know, we hit off a good friendship and he explained the test to me. He has a lab. We started working in his lab that first visit. And basically after that, I would fly out 4 times a year to spend a long weekend with Dr. Abraham in the lab. And he taught me more about iodine than anybody ever.
So hold on. Sorry to interrupt. Let's take our break right there. And then when we come back, let's hear what you found out with Dr. Abraham. So everybody, we want to hear from the UK Health Radio Network. Here's some great words. UK Health, take it away.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, and we're back. We're talking with Dr. David Brownstein about iodine. So you had struck up a new friendship with Dr. Abraham. So what happened next?
Well, you know, I told him about my frustration with iodine, and he said, what form are you using? And I was using iodide, D-I-D-E. Reduced form of iodine. What that means is has a full complement of electrons in its outer shell. And he said, well, why aren't you using iodine, I-D-I-N-E, the oxidized form with it? And I said, does it really matter? He says, don't you know different tissues of the body bind different amounts of iodine? And I'm like, I did not know that. And he pulls the article up, we go through it. And what I didn't know was that some tissues of the body preferentially take up iodine, some take up iodide. And, you know, once I saw that, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist or a smart medical doctor to realize that the best form of iodine for the human body would be a combination of iodine and iodide. And so he was using Lugol's, or he was writing about Lugol's solution. Dr. Lugol in the 1820s developed Lugol's solution, and it was a way to make iodine into soluble form, you know, liquid form, so people could take it in. And he put iodine crystals in a solution of potassium iodide. And it, you know, called Lugol solution from the 1800s. It was the most widely used form of medicine all the way up until the early 1900s in the US and pretty much the Western world until patent medicine took hold. And the reason Lugol solution was used so much then was the number one killer at that time was infections. And there's not a virus, bacteria, parasite, fungus, yeast that has been shown to be resistant to iodine. Iodine, that's one of the reasons to today for surgery, they clean the body off with iodine before they're going to put a surgical wound or you inject. You know, I still do that when I inject people with ozone or, you know, whatever I'm injecting with, I'll clean the area off with iodine since it's such a sterilizing agent. So began studying iodine a little bit differently. I began using Lugol's iodine or a combination of iodine and iodide. And all of a sudden, patients started to report they're feeling better. And I quickly went from having 3/4 of my practice on thyroid hormone, and about an average dose of natural thyroid hormone at that point was probably 120 milligrams. A few years later, I probably have less than 1/4 of my patients on thyroid hormone. And their average dose was 30 milligrams. So I was able to cut the thyroid dose down and you know, almost by fourfold. And I have less patients on thyroid hormone because I'm treating the underlying cause of their problem. But what I didn't realize at the time when I started this was how necessary iodine is for the whole body. Iodine is an essential element we can't live without. Every cell in the body needs and requires iodine. It concentrates in the glandular tissue. So the glandular tissue consists of the thyroid, ovaries, uterus, breast, prostate, pancreas, and testicles. This glandular tissue produces hormones. You can't make a hormone in the body without iodine. So if you think about what we're having problems with in our Western countries now, it's glandular problems. We have 1 in 7 women in the U.S. and very similar numbers in the U.K. with breast cancer. You have 1 in 3 men with prostate cancer, very similar. We have epidemic increases of ovarian, uterine, thyroid cancers. Thyroid cancer is the fastest growing cancer in the U.S. right now. And I say the common link behind all this is iodine. And, you know, we're all recently suffering from a viral infection. And I can tell you the reason it's hit us so hard, I believe, in part, is because this iodine deficiency epidemic. We don't have the right nutrients in our body, you know, when we get hit with something like that. So iodine is, you know, I've always said that if the powers that be come to my office and say, we don't like what you're doing, you can't do any of what you're doing right now. Go back to doing conventional medicine, but we'll give you one thing to take with you. Only one. What would that one thing be? It would be taking iodine. And, you know, I've written papers on it. I've written a book on it, you know, and it's still the most remarkable thing I see in my practice. The biggest bang for the buck is correcting someone's iodine deficiency syndrome. And they feel better. Their metabolism picks up. Their thyroid picks up. If women have fibrocystic breasts, which are precursor to breast cancer, those usually get softer and go away after 6 months or so. Cysts on the ovaries can go away with iodine. You know, one last thing, and I'll let you talk. But there's a continuum of iodine deficiency, and in the glandular tissue. And if, you know, what starts off, if you have enough iodine in your body, the glandular tissue, which is the thyroid, ovaries, uterus, breast, prostate, pancreas, and adrenal glands. If you have enough iodine, you have normal glandular tissue. Let's call this normal glandular tissue. In iodine deficiency, what happens next is you get cysts in the tissues. So in the breast, you get fibrocystic breast disease. In the thyroid, you get thyroid cysts. Ovarian cysts or something like that. If it goes on longer, cysts become hard and nodular in those tissues. If it goes on longer, they take a hyperplastic appearance if there's a biopsy taken, which is a precursor to cancer, which is the end of that road. This has been shown in animal test tube and human studies. And in animal test tube and human studies, iodine has been shown to be able to not only halt this progression, but actually reverse it wherever it catches it. And I've seen the same thing play out in my practice.
Now, what, you know, I'm sure globally here, people across the world are listening and they're like, oh, gosh, thank you for this, you know, valuable information. What exactly, if I was to go down to the local health food store, exactly what would I get? What would I buy?
Well, I mean, first off, it's best to work with a functional doctor or healthcare practitioner who's iodine literate and can talk to you about iodine and can measure and monitor and check things. So that's what I would suggest doing first.
Okay.
Lugol solution, I believe, I know it's available over the counter here. I believe it's over the counter in Canada. Pretty sure it's over the counter in the UK. You know, I've lectured in the UK before. I lectured in Australia. And in both those countries, I did a little research on their iodine levels. And their iodine levels have been falling like ours have over the last 50 years. And they're low in all these countries. And, you know, in the U.S., iodine levels have fallen over 50% over the last 50 years. And I say that's directly correlated to this increase in disease of the breast, ovaries, uterus, pancreas, prostate, adrenals, and thyroid that we're seeing. So it's best to work with somebody because, you know, they're like anything, iodine can have side effects. And, you know, iodine, when you take iodine, iodine's part of the halide family in the periodic table. And if you can remember from, if you haven't had chemistry since high school, if you had chemistry in high school, we learned about the periodic table of elements. Group 17 on the right side of the periodic table is the halides, and there's iodine, fluoride, chloride, and bromide are the four major halides. And two of those halides are essential. We can't live without them. That's iodine and chloride. Chloride's part of salt, by the way. Two of the halides are non-essential and toxic to the human body and have no known therapeutic value. It's bromide and fluoride. The problem in our Western world is our exposure to bromide and fluoride has been drastically increasing over the same time that iodine levels have been falling. And these halides all compete with one another for absorption and binding. So if you get too much fluoride and bromide in the body, iodine and chloride can be thrown out. And, you know, you become toxic. So when you start taking iodine, you can detox from fluoride and bromide. And some people don't react well to that. That's where salt, which we're going to talk about, comes into play. And salt can help you get these halides out of your body much more safely, you know, when taking iodine. So I rarely give people iodine as a supplement without giving them salt to use, you know, together with it. The only people that have problems with salt are congestive heart failure and renal failure patients. Well, your kidneys are set up where they can handle just large amounts of salt, you know, without problems.
I have a little factoid that people might like. So I came from a bakery background. And remember, I told you that Milton, he was a baker. He worked with my mom in the bakery, and Milton was a baker. And he told this to my mom, too, that back in the day, it used to be that iodine, a little drop of iodine, was added to breads as a conditioner, a dough conditioner, and it acted as a preservative. Well, in the States, in mass bread production, that has been replaced with bromine. So on this one tiny level, we were getting a little bit of iodine in our bread. And now instead, we're getting bromine, which you said fills the thyroid. So we're getting the opposite of the thing we need instead of the thing we need. So because we eat so much commercial bread in this country, that's just one source of bromine that we're getting, bromide, to fill the thyroid in replace of our iodine.
That's all true. Milton was right. Up until the 1960s, through the 1960s, iodine was used in bread products as a conditioner, just as you stated. And for some reason, in the early 1970s in the U.S., it was shuttled over to bromide. And I don't really know why that occurred, and I haven't been able to find why. But that's about the time that we started to gain weight in the U.S. And, you know, the question was, did we screw up the thyroid glands by doing that? Luckily in Europe, I don't think they put bromide in their bread products like we do here. And, but, you know, exposure to fluoride and bromide's also found as a fire retardant in other things like carpets and curtains and things like that. And so the exposure to bromide and fluoride can still be elevated, even if it's not in food supplies. But I always tell my patients, you know, don't buy any bread products with, you know, manufactured with brominated flour. There's no reason for it. It's a toxic substance. It certainly shouldn't be in our environment, much less our food. You know, it's nonsense. I don't know quite what the word is to describe doing that. But when you take iodine, it will catalyze, you know, a detoxification reaction with bromide and fluoride being pushed around and having to come out of the body. And if things aren't healthy enough, some people will get sick from that. Generally, if they're taking enough salt when this happens, when they take iodine, it's a way to mitigate that, because the salt can help to usher out the bromide and fluoride.
So let's take our last break, and then we'll talk about salt next, because this is really important. I want to share with everybody that I had this experience. I thought I was allergic to iodine for many, many years, even kelp. If I'd get anywhere near iodine, I would be sick. Well, turns out I was probably just expelling the toxins from my thyroid, and I really thought I was allergic. So thanks to some of the episodes on Gaia, I discovered why that was. So let's hear from the UK Health Radio Network. And when we come back, let's add in the salt equation to this, because there is a way to actually be able to take iodine and get rid of the toxins in the thyroid. So UK Health Radio, take it away.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Dr. David Brownstein. We're having a fascinating conversation about iodine. And we were going to transition into the salt piece.
So I love your story, Liz, about you thought you were allergic to iodine, because I hear this all the time from patients. You know, they say, I can't take iodine if they had a rash after an IV dye for a CAT scan, you know, with iodine. That's a different form of iodine. It's an organified form of iodine. It's bound to radioactive material. Who knows what you're having sensitivity to? Very few of those people actually have a reaction to inorganic non-radioactive iodine level, like what we're talking about. And there are many patients just like you. They get iodine in seaweed or some other form, and they don't feel good. And I always tell them, okay, that's the time to stop iodine. Let's get salt going in your body, a teaspoon or two of salt a day. And then try the iodine a week or two later, which you probably saw when I was on that other interview.
Hold up. You just said a teaspoon or two of salt. Everybody who's on high blood pressure med just lost their minds. So tell us a little bit about this. This really changed the paradigm around salt for me. So I hope that everybody in this short period of time here's this, but more than that, please go out and get Dr. Brownstein's books on the subject. But please, Dr. Brownstein, tell us about a teaspoon or two of salt.
So what happened was I was writing my iodine book. I had switched all, you know, I found iodine is the best thing I've ever done in my practice. So I decided, got to write a book about iodine. I'd had a few books out before then, my Miracle of Natural Hormones and a couple other books out at that point. And so I started writing my first version of iodine. And right when I was near finishing this book, in my local newspaper on Tuesday, there was always a health column from a nutritionist, resident dietitian. And she wrote the question asked to her was, is sea salt any more beneficial than regular table salt? And the answer came back, no, they're both not good for the body. You should limit them and, you know, minimize them, and they cause problems, and no salt. No form of salt is any good. So I remember I was finishing my iodine book. I cut the article out of the paper, pasted it over my computer, so it was on the wall and I saw it every day. And I already knew that was my next book. I've been using salt for years. Unrefined natural salt is a good source of nutrients. And, you know, I had learned that the first major constituent in the human body is water. Body is made up of about 70% water, the brain about 80% water. The next major constituent is salt. And we need huge amounts of salt to make ATP molecules, to make energy molecules, to maintain our blood pressure, to maintain our blood pressure normal. Low salt can make high blood pressure, and low salt can make low blood pressure in people. And we need salt to run hundreds and thousands of different chemical reactions in the body. So I started checking people's salt levels. You know, this was even before the iodine. It was the first 10 years of my practice. And I found people were not optimizing their salt levels. And so I started having people use a little bit of salt, and they would tell me their energy was better, they were feeling better. And, you know, I found that the reference range for salt when you check a blood test was like this. It was just whatever. It was too wide. It should have been like this. And I believe that a adequate salt levels should be 140 milliequivalents per liter or higher. So I've been using salt going into the iodine part of it. And then I found out with iodine that if they didn't have enough salt, they had more problems, just as you described. So salt's a necessary and vital ingredient for the body. If you give people, if you put people on a low salt diet, now we're just talking people with normal kidney function and not congestive heart failure. Those are different people. But if you put people on a low salt diet, what happens is the hormones in the adrenal glands, renin and aldosterone, that are set up to maintain, there's a couple of different hormones that are set up in our body to maintain salt levels within a very tight regimen. Because the human body doesn't do well when it doesn't have salt. It doesn't do well when it doesn't have enough water either. Those are the two major constituents. So we have all these checks and balances to ensure that we keep our salt levels within a really tight range. So there's a reason for that. The reason for that is we need salt. Humans have craved and required and needed salt for as a essential nutrient since the beginning of human time.
So David, how did all this come to be? You know, for now, ever since, I don't know when it was, but you know, when I had hair, when I was a lot younger, you know, that whole thing of, oh my God, you've got blood pressure problems, you need to, you know, salt was demonized. Now, I know that you know about some research there and the falsehood with this research and how it was extrapolated. Maybe you can tell people about that.
Well, when I started using salt in my practice, I didn't think that much about it. I had them use a little bit, then I had them use a teaspoon or two, and no one's blood pressure went up. I mean, there was a patient here or there. They were so few and far between. These are the salt-sensitive individuals. There's a few out there, but there's not that
this
many.
This is not table salt, right? Let's clarify for everyone. This not table salt.
Unrefined salt, but even table salt could do this job too. If we're talking sodium and chloride, but this is unrefined salt with its complement of minerals in it. What I didn't find was people's blood pressures were all going up when I did this. I found, if anything, the blood pressure came down a little bit. Most stabilized. Anyone who didn't have high blood pressure just stayed the same. Those who had high, a lot of them came down. Nobody's went up, or one in a year or something like that went up. And most people felt better with it. So as I do with all this stuff, I start going through literature and I do a deep search. And as I was going through the salt literature, I kept finding this one study referenced for why salt causes high blood pressure and all the hypertension studies. And I would go back in time. I'd go back and I'd pull old references. I mean, that's how I've always done things. So I kept going back and I kept coming to this Intersalt study. This Intersalt study was done in the 1970s, and it was to answer the question, does salt cause high blood pressure? Because in the 1920s or 30s, there were some studies with giving animals huge amounts of salt and their blood pressure went up. So there were some rumblings that salt is causing blood pressure and people need to lower their blood pressure based on that, till the Intersalt study. So the Intersalt study was a worldwide study. I believe there were 40 or 50 centers across the world. And they looked at the salt intake of different populations and what their blood pressure was. And so they found two population centers that had a low salt intake and a low blood pressure. And in every other, I don't remember how many were left after that, 40 or 50, in every other population area they looked at, there was no correlation with the amount of salt intake in the blood pressure could be found, except for these two groups. And it was written up that because the salt intake was low in these two groups, the blood pressure didn't rise as they got older. This is the missing link we have, that salt causes hypertension. Therefore, we all need to eat a low salt diet. The Surgeon General went on TV and was in Life magazine, and he was on 60 Minutes saying it's a national emergency, we need to lower our salt levels. And that's really where it took off steam in the U.S. in the 1970s. What were those two population centers? They were two non-acculturated tribes, one in Brazil and I think one in Papua New Guinea, I don't remember. But they were jungle cultures. And I remember I learned about one of them at the University of Michigan in my undergrad. in my anthropology course, my intro to anthropology. It was the, oh my goodness, they were a tribe in Brazil. I'm blacking on the name right now, but we learned all about them because my professor wrote a book on these people, so we had to learn all about them. And so it was written in that Intersalt study that as the population aged and they ate this low-salt diet, their blood pressure didn't go up like every other population they studied. So therefore, you need to eat a low-salt diet. Well, these two populations, they didn't age. Their average age of death was 50 because they were they were living in the jungle. They had a rough life. I wrote about that, and I wrote an article about it and saying, this is nonsense. This is not what we should be basing national recommendations on. And that's really where it started and where it's kind of kept through to today. Now, one of the things, the reason we might be promoting low-salt diets is because it triggers these reflex adrenal hormones to make your blood pressure go up. You get renin, you get aldosterone going up, which causes a constriction of the blood vessels and blood pressure rises a little bit. And then guess what? There's anti-renin, anti-hypertensive molecules. There's anti-aldosterone, anti-hypertensive molecules given to lower blood pressure down. If you put someone on a low-salt diet, it actually may raise their blood pressure, requiring them to need anti-hypertensive medications. What else they really needed was a little bit of salt to settle their hormones down so they don't have to raise their blood pressure. That's what I see with my patients, and use judiciously and use with proper monitoring. You know, we're talking unrefined salt. There is a difference between refined and unrefined salt. Refined salt is that thin white stuff that has sodium and chloride and some toxic chemicals like ferrocyanide and aluminum and fluoride. And iodine attached. Iodine's not toxic, but the other ones are attached to it. Unrefined salt has over 80 minerals in it, and it's the minerals that come with the salt naturally. So I've used unrefined salt in my practice for close to 30 years now, 25 years or so. And there's a very, very few patients where they take salt and their blood pressure goes up, or they get swollen if they don't have heart disease or kidney disease. And they need to limit their salt. But those are a patient a year or less than that.
So we actually, kind of funny, after we, discovered you and I started to research some salt, there are things that we do in our work where that we use salt. So one of the things is that in our work, sometimes there's a thing that's called neurological overload. And we find that having a person hold salt in their hand, the hand will start to sweat and the body starts to absorb the salt. And it actually stops what looks like a little bit like shock. Well, we discovered that for our work, the body really needed to be salinated well to be conductive. Salty fluid, salty blood are far more electromagnetically conductive. So I'm this weirdo now who literally has salt everywhere. I have it in my purse. I have it in my, in my kitchen. I have it in my office. And I'll take a chunk of Himalayan sea salt and put it under my tongue. Well, people do it in the office too. And what I discovered is when I do that, I have great energy for the day. When I forget to do it, my energy lags. So we thought, it must have something to do with the body literally being able to utilize its own energy, the salt conductivity.
Absolutely. You're 100% on the mark. And in my salt book, I hinted at that. And I wrote about that you need salt to move energy throughout the body. And electricity, we know there's electricity throughout the human body. Is we can measure electrical activity of the heart. We can measure electrical activity of the brain, measure electrical activity of the nerves going to the extremities. And you need adequate amounts of salt to help that function, to support that function.
Yeah. When in our work, we know that the voltage goes up after a session, it's measurable. And when a person utilizes the extra salt after a session for the few days after, at least, their transition is far easier. Their results are better because their body is more conductive. And on average, people are not using anywhere near the amount of salt you're talking about. They may have sodium in their diet if they eat a lot of processed foods. And I think that's where this low sodium diet came from, is the doctors wanting people to eliminate high sodium foods that are ultra processed. But that's really not at all what we're talking about. We're talking about getting a really good natural source of salt, right?
So if you think about a battery, you know, a battery needs a lot of salt in it.
Yeah.
Battery needs some other minerals in it too. You know, it's not just salt. That's where that unrefined salt comes into play. And, you know, we check voltage readings on patients all the time. You find the same thing you find, that voltage goes up with salt. You know, I can tell you during this flu season, we see a lot of patients, and we've seen a lot of patients for 30 years, and certainly over the last 2.5 years, that become dehydrated. They can't eat. They lose their appetite. They lose their smell. They lose their taste, or they're vomiting or diarrhea or something. And, you know, they're dehydrated. And let me tell you, those ones who have low salt levels, you know, sodium levels below 130, they can die from that. They get arrhythmias of the heart. They are a mess, and you got to get those salt levels up relatively quickly, or they're going to end up in the hospital, or worse, they're going to die or have a seizure from it. And so it's really important to maintain adequate salt levels, particularly when you're sick. And just saw a patient this morning who had a really low sodium level. And I said to her, look, she was getting leg cramps and foot cramps. And my diagnosis of leg cramps and foot cramps, it's salt deficiency until proven otherwise. How much salt do you need? Enough salt till the leg cramps and foot cramps go away. How much is that? Till the leg cramps and foot cramps go away. Is it a teaspoon? Well, did your leg cramps and foot cramps go away? It didn't, take another teaspoon, whatever it is. She was having leg cramps and foot cramps. And I said, you know, not that's fine, but I said, hey, that's all you're getting right now. You're lucky. But I said, because if you get sick with something that causes your sodium levels to fall further, you're going to end up in the hospital. You're going to end up worse with a seizure, stroke, or potentially heart attack or heart arrhythmia or death. And, you know, it's really important to have your salt levels monitored and checked. And, you know, I like you, I carry salt wherever I go.
Yeah.
My water bottle here, I always put salt in every water bottle. You know, human beings are, you know, we have over, if we measure the dry weight of sodium and chloride in our bodies right now, wherever we're sitting and where we're at, there should be over 1 gram of sodium and 1 gram of chloride. That's a large amount in our body. You know, we're really salty individuals. I mean, we were designed that way. Cultures couldn't survive if there wasn't adequate salt supply somewhere. You know, if you look at human civilizations where they built big cities, there was some kind of salt source for them. You know, salt was a commodity. It was fought over. There were wars fought over salt back in the day. So we figured out how to manufacture enough salt for the whole human population.
Yeah, it's where the word salary comes from. I just want to say that I can attest to how serious needing salt is. My husband nearly died from dehydration that happened, you know, just during a regular day, not even an extreme situation, nearly died. And after that, his doctor really talked to him about salt. And his cue that he needs to take more salt, he will get terrible leg and foot cramps. And so he keeps it on him. And where he works, all the guys at his shop know about it and they use it too. So you guys, I cannot believe it, but we are actually completely out of time. We have 1 minute to go. Dr. Brownstein, will you please tell everyone where they can find these books? And I got to say, personally, I can't recommend them more highly. Please tell us where to find you.
So you can go to my website. It's drbrownstein.com. Here's my iodine book. And here's the salt book. I write about what works in my practice. And I write my books because I get passionate or I get irritated about something. And either way, I can get a book out or I can get some writings out, you know, that way. But this is what works in my practice. This is what I found work. And I think that we need to make a paradigm shift in medicine, and it needs to be done now. And, you know, these viruses that are attacking us do not have to make us fearful if we have enough nutrition and the right balance of things in our body. And, you know, iodine's part of that, salt's part of that, and, you know, a whole host of other things. And getting the hormonal system balanced is certainly a way to help you optimize your health.
Yeah, absolutely. These are just two minerals that are just so important. We wanted to highlight them. Bill, and I want to thank you so much for coming today. We hope you'll come back, as this is such a part of such a bigger conversation. Bill McKenney, any quick last thoughts? We are out of time. Well, Bill McKenney's muted.
Just can't wait to have you back again, David.
Well, thank you guys for having me. This was fun.
All right, everybody, in UK Health Radio Land, we will see you again next week. Until then, be safe and be well.
Thanks for being here with us on the New Life Perspective Radio Show. For more information or to find out more about the work that Bill and I do, please visit us at cognomovement.com or email us at info@cognomovement.com. See you again soon.